Good morning. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
There we go. Please open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. I appreciate the opportunity to speak while Steve is out. And hopefully we'll learn at least something from today's lesson. I appreciate all of you who are visiting with us this morning. I invite you to stick around. Somebody after services may try to get in touch with you and hand you a visitor's card. So, and if you have any questions about anything that we do, if it is your first time here, feel free to ask. Hopefully by now, you found Hebrews chapter 12. We'll read there in just a moment, the first couple of verses. I've always been intrigued, at least with being our theme for the year, about this cloud of witnesses that we can look at that are somehow some people that we can find encouragement and see an example in trying to live according to the way that we are supposed to, trying to run that race with endurance, looking unto Jesus. And so I've been intrigued by this, and hopefully today as we expound a little bit about this topic, we'll be able to get a little bit of an appreciation, if nothing else, for something that we can do in order to be able to run our race with endurance. And then the other reason I picked this topic is because since Steve, when he'll be back next Sunday, will have to do a lesson to fix my lesson this morning, I may as well make it easy on him. So, but Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." It is interesting to see how this is the conclusion of Hebrews chapter 11, where the author of Hebrews just lists character after character that we define as the heirs of faith or the hall of fame of faith. These people that have done something very memorable with God. And so we're going to look at some of these people today, some of these characters from Hebrews chapter 11. And we hopefully will learn at least three aspects of their journey. And hopefully we can apply that to our race. Hebrews chapter 11 in verse 1. "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it men of old gain approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. And he was not found because God took him up, for he obtained a witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead. At that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things made it clear that they are seeking a country of their own, and indeed if they are, had been thinking of the country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abram, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promise was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's law. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to a reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured the seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. There's a lot in this chapter, a lot more than we can cover in our lesson this morning. But hopefully we can look at three specific aspects that characterize the lives of these characters. And the first one is vision. Vision is very important in leadership, especially. You may hear it in the business world a lot. But vision, we may define it just as a general way to define it for our lives, as the ability to see the big picture of where we're heading and how we're going to get there. Just a general definition. And that's something important in sports. For example, a marathon is just as much as it is physical as it is mental, because one has to run for a long time and you have to focus and you have to try to make it. And you have to break up the race and all those things that people talk about when they run marathons, which I have no clue about because I never ran a marathon and I don't plan to. But these are important things that we are to do. And if we look at Luke chapter 14, we see something that Jesus says about having vision. In Luke chapter 14, we realize that by ourselves we are not able to get there. And so we need somebody to direct us. And sometimes it becomes a little bit difficult and challenging to have vision, the ability to see the big picture. In Luke chapter 14, in verses 28 to 32, and then we're going to pick up 26, 27, and 33. So starting in Luke 14, in verse 28, Jesus says, "Which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and consider whether he is strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter the one who coming against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace." See, you have to plan for something. We have to plan when we live according to Jesus' will. We have to plan to please God. We have to plan to do the best we can to follow him, to run that race with endurance. We cannot just set out and start running thinking we're going to run a marathon. We never trained before. We never prepared before. We have to plan for it. In fact, three verses that serve to frame what Jesus is saying are found in verse 26. Luke 14, 26, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." Verse 33, "So then none of you can be my disciples who does not give up all his own possessions." What can you ask of anything else, Jesus, that we have to give up? We have to realize what the challenge is when we start this race. We have to realize that Jesus is asking for everything. He's going to ask for everything. He's going to ask to be the first and always the first. Jesus, in fact, is not shy about mentioning a cross in verse 27. pick up your cross and follow me, says a few chapters before in Luke chapter 9. In order to be disciples of Jesus, we have to trade off what we enjoy in this life for a cross. But we have to understand, we have to realize what we are doing and why we are doing it and where we are going towards the promise that God has given us. See, the so-called heroes of faith had vision. It's interesting for a chapter that mentions faith so many times, more than 25 times in Hebrews 11, it is interesting to see how many times anything that has to do with vision, with seeing, with looking, with not seeing is mentioned also. In Hebrews 11, in verse 7, Noah, being warned by of God, things not yet seen. He could still see it in a way because he was preparing for it. In verse 8, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going to another place, he was to receive his inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. He was just going. He didn't know. He couldn't see where he was going, really. In verse 10, he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Verse 13, these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them, having welcomed them from a distance. In verse 24 through 27, we see how Moses, he gives up being the child of the most powerful family in the world. In verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, who was there, he could see him, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. He could see what is unseen because he had vision. And we need to have vision as well. These people had vision, and we have to have it too. We are running the race, not by ourselves. This is not something that we're doing alone. See, in our society, we do a lot of things alone because we focus on self so much. Especially many competitions is whoever gets there first wins. But this race is whoever gets there wins. Everybody. And we are not alone. Maybe we have somebody in our family that we are running with. Maybe a spouse, maybe a child. Or maybe we are alone in this phase of life, but we still have our brothers and sisters we are running with. One thing that we need to be mindful of is that as parents of young children, we have to have vision for our children as well. Because they are young, they rely on us to have vision for them. We cannot get carried away by how busy life gets. We cannot be just so busy with working and providing and taking care of them, but we have no vision for them. We cannot just get involved in so many activities more than we can handle, that we just leave our children aside. Our children are in this race as well, that we realize it or not. So we have to have vision for them as well. And they rely on us for it. Thankfully, it is easier for us today to have vision than it was in the past. Did you see in verse 27 of Hebrews 11 that we just read, where it says of Moses, he endured as seeing him who is unseen? He could see, but not quite see. But then we get to chapter 12 that we read earlier at the beginning of the lesson. In verse 1, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is seen before, that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. We can look back and see clearly. See, Moses, you know how we say sometimes, what would Jesus do? Moses could not ask what would Jesus do because Jesus had not come yet. He didn't know what would Jesus do. Moses could not see as clearly as we can. We don't have too much of an excuse not to have vision in our lives for the race that we're running. It is easier to have vision today for us than it was back then. So we have very little excuse not to have vision. And of course, the second trait that we need to have as we run a race with endurance is faith. We need faith. Earlier we defined vision as the ability to see the big picture of where we are heading and how we are going to get there. Faith is what helps vision. They go together. In verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 11 in verse 1, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. They go together. Vision keeps us focused on our goal and sustains our faith. A And faith is what turns vision into reality, into something more tangible. It is, again, in verse 1, the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. I cannot see, but I know it's real. And so vision and faith go together. They help each other. Now, one thing to clarify is that whenever our vision and faith in God don't agree, faith in God takes precedence. And we see that in the example of Abraham. In Genesis chapter 15, if you're going to turn with me to Genesis chapter 15, Abraham is promised a descendant and a child. And he has all that discussion about Eliezer of Damascus being my descendant. And God says, no, somebody coming from your own flesh will be your son. 10 years go by. 10 years go by and we get to Genesis 16 in verse 1. Genesis 16 in verse 1, it says, now Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Agar. So Sarah said to Abraham, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will attain children through her. And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarah. After Abraham had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abraham's wife Sarai took Agar, the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as his wife. And we know how the story goes. Agar has a child. You see the problem? God has said you're going to have a child. And so Abram and Sarah are making sure that the child comes about. But the vision of Abram and Sarah in this case was not what God's vision was. It was not what he said it was going to happen. They were just making it happen their own way with their own vision. And so they did not have enough faith to trust that God was going to take care of it as he was supposed to do. When our vision and faith in God don't agree, we have to give precedence to faith in God. There's a simple reason for that. He is the one that sees it all. God really, you know, we can say that faith in God is really faith in God's vision, but it's more faith in God's view. Because God sees all. He's the one that can tell the end from the beginning. He declares it because he knows how it's going to happen and what is going to happen and how things are going to end up. He knows what's going to happen. And so when we think we should do something in one way, because we are going to get there somehow, but God says you're going to do things differently, we're going to do it God's way, even though it seems unreal, it seems impossible. We need to adhere to God's vision, because he's the one that laid out the course of the race we are running. He's the one that has defined the goal. And he's the one that is waiting there at the finish line for us. He knows how we're supposed to get there. In Hebrews 11, the expression by faith happens 19 times. And every time of those times that you read by faith, there's an action verb afterwards. By faith, Hebrews 11:3, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God. By faith, Moses left Egypt, verse 27 of chapter 11. By faith, we do something. By faith, we obey, because faith drives our obedience. Faith that God knows what's best for us. Faith that God knows how we are going to get there, and not ourselves. Jesus himself had to learn obedience through the things that he suffered, says Hebrews 5 and verse 8. And again, we see how we are supposed to run with endurance in Hebrews 12 in verse 1. The race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He served as the example of faith and of obedience because of what he did. If we want to measure our faith, just look at our obedience. How willing are we to obey God? How are we doing in obeying God? That's a good measure to see how our faith is doing in our lives. And finally, at least for this lesson, to run a race with endurance, we need to give God a chance. See, it's easy to see something like Hebrews 11, where all these heroes of faith are going through a parade, if you will. And we admire these people because they've done such great things with God. They are examples, and they've been examples to children of God for thousands of years now. They seem to be, however, on a different league than we are. This is kind of like me trying to do something versus the world champion in that discipline to do the same thing. We look at these people and say, well, Abraham, Noah, Moses, I'll never get there. And so we stop trying. See, when we perceive something to be too difficult, we don't even bother with it. Am I ever going to learn to play the violin? Probably not. It just seems too difficult to me. I'm not even going to bother with it. Am I ever going to play basketball like an NBA person? No, I'm not even going to bother with it. Am I ever going to be as faithful as Abraham? No, that's how we think. So why bother? When we perceive the gap to be too wide, then we don't even try. We think these people are just too far from us. But are they really some kind of superhuman? Were they made of something different than flesh and blood like we are? Were they something different than just us here in regular life with our daily struggles trying to make it? They were people just like us. They were normal people like we are. And there are challenges, as we do. Just look at Noah in Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6, I don't know how many times it can be stated that the world had become a really bad place in Genesis chapter 6. But we look at Genesis chapter 6 in verse 5. Genesis chapter 6 in verse 5, it says, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. In verse 5, is the world is wicked and it's evil. And then we get to verse 11. The earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. In verse 12, God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all the flesh corrupted their way upon the earth. Verse 13, God said, the end of the flesh had come before me, for the earth is filled with violence. Do you get the point? The world was out of control. And so we know how it goes. You know, God presses the reset button, the flood wipes out everything. Noah is the only one righteous man that is found, and so through the ark, he and his family and the animals are saved. But then we get to Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, in verse 20. Then Noah began farming and planted a vineyard. You know, maybe it just after the flood, maybe he was tired of people offering him more water. And so he just planted a vineyard. And he drank of the wine and became drunk and uncovered himself inside his tent. Now, the man who escaped a world that was out of control himself loses control. We just turn a couple of pages, we get to Abram, the father of the faithful. Abram, the father of the faithful, in Genesis chapter 12, in verse 10. And he does something similar again in Genesis chapter 20, which we're not going to look at in this lesson. Genesis chapter 12, in verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. It came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarah, his wife, see now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is my wife, this is his wife, and they will kill me. But they will let you live. Please, say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you. We'll learn eventually that he's saying that, especially in chapter 20, because Sarah really was his half-sister. But he's asking Sarah to deceive, because he was afraid he would get killed. Could it be that the father of the faithful does not have enough faith in God to trust that he will carry out his promise to give him a child, to give him a descendant. We have Moses in Numbers chapter 20. In Numbers chapter 20, at the waters of Meribah. Numbers chapter 20, in verse 8. God said, after the Israelites are complaining because there is no water, God said, take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron, assemble the congregation and speak to the rod before their eyes, that it may be yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink. Numbers 20, verse 9. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. Yes, Moses does not speak to the rock. He actually strikes the rock twice. But Moses also says in verse 10, shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? And God says, there is no we. I am holy. I am set apart. I am by myself on a league of my own. And you shall not enter the land. There is no we. Could it be that Moses, the most humble man on the earth, Numbers 12 verse 3, overstepped his boundaries this time? These men were human, just like us. And they probably started farther behind than we have. So how did they get there? How did they make it to Hebrews 11? How did they get there? Were they special in any way? These men just gave God a chance. See, when we see the people listed here in Hebrews 11, especially the early ones, by the time they are around, God, in a way, is still building his credentials. He's still building his resume. There's not a bunch of Old Testament writing that somebody can just go and refer to and see all the great things that God has done. So, okay, then I'll trust God. Like, you know, by the time you come to Jericho, Rahab said, well, we heard what God has done for you. There's very little of that, if any. At least later, God can introduce himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But when it comes to Enoch, what does he say? I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Don't ask. You'll understand, maybe one day. What does he do? He's still building his credentials. And so, as we look at Hebrews chapter 11, we see a list of people that were faithful to God. But what we also see is a list of first-time occurrences in the biblical text. Hebrews chapter 11 in verse 4. How many sacrifices are we told had been offered before the one of Cain and Abel? Verse 5. How many people are we told that walked with God before Enoch came along? Verse 7. How many worldwide floods destroyed everything before Noah built the ark? Verse 8. How many people before Abram left the center of civilization to go to a place not knowing where they were going? Verse 11. How many times before Abram did a barren woman in her 90s and a man 100 years old have a child? Verse 17. How many times before Abram had God tested the faith of one of his followers by asking them to sacrifice their son? And one last one in verse 29. How many times before Israel crosses the Red Sea had a country left, the most powerful country in the world, by walking across the sea on dry land? See, God was building his resume. But these and other men are the ones that gave me a chance. They gave me a chance to do it. These are heroes of faith because of the great things they have done. But maybe they're also heroes of faith because they gave a chance to God to begin with, whenever he did not have a long resume to go to. Whenever God was not as known of a God as he is today, or he was later on. Did these characters do great and wonderful things from the start? They did, a little bit at a time. I'm not sure how many great things we'll do in our lives like these people have done. But I know that just like Abraham, just like Noah, just like Moses, we all can give a chance to God like they did to begin with, to let him grow our faith, to let him help us as we run with endurance the race that is set before us. See, the thing that we don't like is that giving God a chance takes time. It's not just like a one-and-done thing. How many days, months, years would have taken Noah to build an ark? Abraham waited 25 years for his son. What did he do in those 25 years? Well, he obeyed God for the most part. What did he do after those 25 years? He kept obeying God. And in the meantime, God also made some requests. Abram, leave your country. Go to a place that I'll show you. Abram, you're going to have a son, but not this son. Wait a little bit more. Abram, now you have a son. Okay, go kill him. Every time God seems to ask for more and more. Every time Abram moves to the next step, God still stretches him a little bit more. Abram had a continuous willingness to sacrifice for God. And if there is any way that we can measure our commitment to something, is our willingness to sacrifice for that thing. That is a measure of commitment, how willing we are to sacrifice for that thing. We're not committed to something until we're willing to sacrifice for it. So we need to give God a chance to allow him to help us run with endurance the race that is set before us. There's one last thing that we need to run with endurance. And that is the thing that is mentioned in Hebrews 12. That is the leaving sin and any obstacles that are hindering us. Yes, we need vision to know, we realize what is involved in this race. Yes, we need faith to make it happen. Yes, we need to give God a chance so that he can help us the way that he helped us. He helped so many in the past. But we also need to leave sin behind, to get rid of it. Is there anyone here this morning who is allowing sin to hinder you running your race? Is there anyone here this morning who needs help in prayer from the congregation? Is there anyone here this morning who needs to make their life right with God? Come forward as we stand and as we sing.